Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
At times, the news about the future of planet Earth can be, well, a bit difficult to hear. Just today, we hear about the ancient forests of Indonesia being ripped up and destined to disappear within 20 years, and shortages of water as the source of future resource wars. Are we destined to be victims, or are there things we can do? In just a moment, you'll find out about how you can readapt to the changing future and become a professional change agent when your voice of the Earth returns here on the Wildside News. It seems that so much of what we hear when we listen to the news of the myriad new challenges facing us in the years ahead is based on the struggles between good business and bad business. Sure, profits in the old sense made sense until they began to steal the wealth, the natural wealth, from our communities, our nation, and now the entire planet. That drive for profit, now being applied to the emerging new giants, has one redeeming quality. We, here in the U.S., are losing our place as the number one exploiter on the planet. Make room for the new bad guys, like China and India, that seem hell-bent on making many of the same mistakes that we've made in their race to the good life. Perhaps there's a second benefit from our years of being the masters of modernization, and that is the capacity to learn from our mistakes, and then to take what we've learned and develop effective ways to address our future. One of the new applications of our wisdom is birthing amongst the wonders of the Presidio in San Francisco, where we go now for our next report. It's a beautiful spring day, and one of my favorite places when I think about spring to imagine is San Francisco. And one of the most amazing places in San Francisco is the Presidio. Now joining me from that particular neck of the woods, Dr. Ron Naser is the provost at the Presidio School of Management that is located in the Presidio. Ron, welcome to the Wildside News.
Well, thank you very much, Sydney. Delighted to be on the program.
Ron, the Presidio School of Management is focusing on a rather unique area that is very appropriate to the Wildside News here. Give us a little history on the Presidio School of Management.
Well, the basic story is really one of a business. The school's lineage goes back about 40 years to an educator, Richard Gray, who became interested in adult education and adult learning. And he started the Presidio World College about 15 years ago as a degree completion program for people in their 30s to 40s and who were interested in being entrepreneurs with sustainable and ethical enterprise design. See, he's an ex-advertising person as I am, so he recognized a good idea. So they tested the idea in the Bay Area with people, and they found out that there was a number of people who said, well, I've already got my undergraduate degree, I'm interested in business, I'm interested in sustainability, but you offer something like a master's program. And the more they talked about it, they thought, well, it's a master's of business administration, the MBA, which is one of the revered and most successful educational programs that have been put together probably certainly in the last century, and is spreading all over the world for better or for worse. So what they did is to develop an MBA program, a two-year program. It's now a two-year or a four-year program. Of 16 courses, all integrated. I can tell you more about the curriculum, but It was launched 2.5 years ago. We graduated our first class last June, and we're going to graduate our second class this June.
Congratulations. That's fabulous. Sustainability and business, this seems to be the new trend line. A lot of people are talking about it. It's going totally mainstream. It still is a little bit below the radar in some arenas. Let's talk about sustainability in business and why it is that this is gaining such currency now.
Well, the basic model that certainly is talking about MBA programs as a way of thinking of how business operates, it's no secret that certainly for the last probably 100 years, business schools and businesses themselves have been seized by the idea that the purpose of business is to maximize return to shareholders. And that's what's led to the preeminence of finance as really driving business strategies. More and more people have started to say, well, wait a minute, that's maybe too narrow a view when we need to take a broader view. And once you start moving beyond a narrow perspective of shareholders, you move into the expression of what they call stakeholders. Who else has an interest in the business? Well, obviously customers do, but employees do. Well, then what about the communities that you're in? Do they have a stake in the business? Well, yes, they do. Well, then what about the natural resources? And so what you're really doing is having business broaden their perspective of the impact that they have. And that's been the basic idea that businesses are now realizing that they need to take more of what's under the euphemism of corporate social responsibility is one way. But another way, businesses are finding out if they actually look at their business in a broader perspective, they might be more efficient in how they actually operate. So you can make a business case for sustainability as well. A simple one is the issue of waste. Companies find out, well, gee, if we really are concerned about our carbon footprint, so-called, well, let's look at our energy costs, and they find out by being more efficient, they actually save a lot of money, too.
It used to be that corporations, when faced with these kinds of challenges, would say, well, you know, we'd love to do that, but it really isn't cost-effective. We can't really afford it. It's not practical. That's changing now, isn't it? It's really actually being turned on its head, and there are some prime examples. 3M, for example, has a, which I believe you've participated in.
Yes.
They've really learned from their experience in terms of the manufacturing process to build in sustainability. Why don't you give us a perspective on that?
Well, what you can take any number of companies. I'll give you another example, which is, and we can turn to 3M because they've been working on eco-efficiency for any number of years because mm-hmm. they see this as they're innovators and they look to see where needs are and mm-hmm. then how to actually adapt products. To address the market, but the one simple example I think all your listeners will recognize is if they look down on the floor of the office or home that they're in, they'll see carpeting. And carpeting has been historically wall-to-wall. It was one of the great success marketing efforts of the carpet industry to sell a lot of carpeting. A company said, well, maybe we shouldn't sell carpeting, but we should lease it. And that means that when the carpeting wears out, that the company takes it back and recycles it. And maybe even better, maybe the carpeting should be in tiles, because when you look at most hallways or offices, there's a couple of areas that are worn out, but the carpeting on the edges are fine. So it was a way of thinking about the product from the whole life cycle, what they call cradle to grave or cradle to cradle, actually, is so that if you are making carpeting, where did you get your raw materials from, and when they're finally the end life cycle of the carpet is over, where does that go and can you recycle it? Now, recycled paper is another example of that, that people are realizing that if you look at it as a complete system, as business as a system, you can start to see examples of waste and then be more efficient. The last example I'd mention just as a philosophy is what's called lean manufacturing, and you know, why are Toyota cars so much better built than General Motors cars? And a lot of it has to do with that the Japanese have an aversion to waste. And so they think very consciously about the most efficient use of resources, which is exactly what nature does.
Talk a little bit about 3M, too, because they have really, as you say, they kind of pioneered this. And they're finding that when they build in these concepts, it literally becomes a profitable arena as opposed to a cost.
Yes. And the reason why is because they're an engineering-driven company. And engineers are one of the best people for thinking about the whole system of how things are actually made. And that's what we really need to do is to look at all of nature. And Sydney, you and I were talking earlier about this, is that nature is an incredible engineer. And engineers know about feedback loops, and they know about very efficient use of resources. And in nature, there is no waste. Everything is a food for something else, and everything is recycled. And so those are the models. There's even a name for it. Jeanine Benyus, one of the leaders in this area, came up with the idea of biomimicry. And engineers at 3M and other places are saying, how can a spider weave something stronger than Kevlar at room temperature. And so we're really looking at rethinking the whole way of how nature has really been an incredible engineer and manufacturer well before we got into our more wasteful and less efficient systems of human engineering.
We've learned a lot of lessons recently, and they've been talked about for a long time. They're just reaching currency now. But that is a fact that nature and humans are dramatically interlocked in quite a dance. And we're never going to escape really the force and power of nature. So it's best that we integrate, and that's beginning to really happen. And that becomes the foundation for the sustainable management and strategies. So tell me, how is it that you utilize, for example, biomimicry in terms of developing management and marketing strategies that lead to sustainability?
Well, what we've looked at the curriculum overall, if you know much about business schools, a lot of it's driven by the famous case method by one of our famous business schools in the East. Mm-hmm. And what we've found is that students in a business school will need to come into contact when they're in management with real life products and real life people. And so what we stress in our curriculum is the human dimension of business, which is how people really need to interact, and the real definition of management almost as a communications discourse of how you actually organize and lead people through conversations. The second piece of it is the product. And so I think we're one of the few business schools where we have a required products and services course where the students are actually required to analyze and develop a product idea. And give you one example, each year Time Magazine has come out with, the past couple of years, the 100 top new products, because product design is becoming a more important element in business. And we asked the students to pick a product and back engineer it. And what they found to their amazement, that of the 100 products, almost none of them are really sustainable products. So it's to bring the consciousness of business people that they're actually selling something, and even if it's a service, in some way it's connected to a product eventually, that something is consumed in the process. And what is it, and how has it actually been thought of, and how is it sustainable?
So if a person comes to your school, and by the way, we'll be talking about how people can learn more about this, what can they look forward to? How are they going to spend their time? What is going to be the focus of their year or two? And ultimately, when they graduate, how is it that this can lead to their participating in the real world? What's going to happen as they come to your school, and where do they go from there?
Well, we found, Sydney, that my background has been marketing, so I understand competitive positioning. And we do look to see what we offer that's different from the many other business schools in the country and the world, for that matter. One of our students, interestingly enough, flies in from Paris for our four-day residency each month because he couldn't find a school that he felt was addressing these issues. We generally, about half of our students come to us who had never thought about an MBA because they were concerned about business, they thought it was too financially oriented, and didn't feel they would get what they needed in order to do the work they wanted to do in the world. Every student comes here with some sort of an idea. And we stress that, and we say, look, if you're just kind of searching and don't really have an idea of whether you want to go into business or public policy or social services, all important areas of the economy in our society, then don't come here, because when you come out of here, we want you to be ready to engage in real work. Now, it may not be the work that you want to do perhaps for the rest of your life, but you want to have something where you will be able to engage the world in a project or a company or an effort that we're calling needs management. So when students come in, much of the curriculum is project oriented. We do a lot of work with our students working in companies for New Leaf Paper, for McDonald's, for Starbucks. Different companies will come to us and want students to help them think about issues. So it's very real world driven. At the same time, they're working on what we call their venture plan. Last two semesters of the program, they have to develop a project that is actually implementable. Now, it may not be a project that they will implement, although some of our students do, but they've got to show that they have an idea of how to actually develop something that they can implement and do in the world that is furthering the cause of sustainability. So then our students, a number of them, one of them last year opened up her own retail store 3 months after graduation. Others went into the kind of work that they want to do, and they were able to actually take their venture plans and implement them. The other students, it furthered along their career ambitions. One student, as an example, worked on a project where it isn't the exact work she wants to do, but it moved her closer to the work where she wants to be in, say, 10 years out. So we encourage, just like you do with sustainability, to have the students thinking longer term, but coming out with real work and competencies where they can begin to do the work they want to do in the world.
The interesting thing that's happened recently is the fact that sustainability now is becoming totally mainstreamed.
Right.
So quite honestly, I think the interesting thing for you is that your market trend line is going to be advancing dramatically. You're going to be growing. This is what people need to know right now.
Yes.
And so if people want to find out more about the Presidio School of Management, what's the best way for them to do so?
I think the best way is to go to the website, presidiomba.org, and that'll give you a story and links to follow up.
Fabulous. Well, I wish we had a little more time. Unfortunately, we're a little short on time today. Dr. Ron Naser, Provost at the Presidio School of Management, thanks so much for lending your voice to the Wild Side News.
Thank you, Sydney, and thank you for your efforts.
It's a great opportunity. And those of you who are anxious to jump into the sustainability movement will find our next segment a terrific starting point. If you want to walk the walk, you now have to talk the talk. And it's a whole new language you'll need. When we return, it's your dictionary of sustainability. When your voice of the earth returns, here on the Wild Side News.
Rivers on the rise, swift and gentle like the breeze. It swallows everything but sky. Suffocates the trees. Here comes the water. Should I struggle or give in? Does it even matter if I sing? If I sink or swim.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
And now there ain't no more higher ground. As far as I can see. My heart begins to pound. You know it's getting tough to breathe. Here comes the water. Should I struggle or give in? Does it even matter?